A mini Unifest at Union Temple Baptist Church. This is an opportunity to honor the past and build bridges for a united future for our children and families, reviving the values of the Million Man March and Unifest. Details at UnionTempleDC.com.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Thank you to our engineer for kicking our show tonight. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Inside Out Radio, where we come in to you all every Monday at 6 p.m. And I hope that you all are having a good evening. We have an amazing show for you tonight that we've curated in honor and in celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day. But before we get to our show for today, which is also a pledge drive, we wanted to honor what today is. So we're going to start our show with a land acknowledgement from WPFW 89.3 FM and Inside Out Radio. So we begin Inside Out, before we begin the conversation that we're going to have, Inside Out Radio on WPFW 89.3 FM acknowledges that we broadcast from the ancestral and unceded lands of the Piscataway and Anacostian people. We honor the original stewards of this land, past, present, and emerging, who have cared for these territories long before the city we now called Washington, D.C. We recognize their deep connection to the land, the waterways, and the community, and we commit to uplifting Indigenous voices and stories through our platform. As the show that centers truth, identity, and liberation, we extend our gratitude and solidarity to all Indigenous peoples whose resilience and wisdoms continue to guide our collective path toward justice and healing. My name is Bianca Sprague. I am one of your Inside Out Collective show, and I am here with my co-host, Mimi. Hi, Mimi. How are you?
Doing good. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Now we can hear you.
Yes, darling.
We are celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day. As I've said in the beginning, we have an amazing guest who we're going to learn a little bit more about. And let's get right into it. Right, I mentioned that we are on a pledge drive. But before we get there, let us tell our listeners who we are. As I've said, my name is Bianca Sprague, and I'm joined here with my co-host, Mimi, and we are Inside Out Radio that illuminates and celebrates the rich diversity that is the LGBTQIA plus experiences. Our groundbreaking show has aired since 2008 and in Washington, D.C.'s only show of its kind on the FM dial and one of only a handful in the country. As the name implies, we'll take you inside this community to look at everything from pop culture to politics through the lens of LGBTQI+. We are proud to be part of the legacy of cutting-edge public affairs programming on WPFW-FM 89.3, home of Jazz and Justice Radio. Inside Out airs every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 89.3 FM. And online on WPFWFM.org. So tune in on Mondays and support Inside Out. We also love to hear from our listeners, so we invite you to ask any questions, join the conversation that we're going to have tonight by calling in 202-588-0993. I am so excited, but I have more information to just take
us yes.
said. It is pledge drive, and we know how important, you know, this time that we're having to continue the work that we're doing in uplifting our voices and elevating our visibility. So the pledge drive that we're having today has the theme of music, memory, and social justice. WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether you're reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. And it is in our listeners' generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. So we are asking for our listeners to donate to our pledge drive that started yesterday, October 12th, and it will run all the way to October 25th. And how you're going to donate is by signing in on WPFWFM.org and just click the donate button. Or you can also call us on 1-800-222-9739. Our goal for this hour is $250. So if you want to buy us coffee, instead of buying us coffee, donate to our pledge drive, again, through online on WPFWFM.org or by calling 1-800-222-9739. All right, there we go. I am very, very excited to introduce to you our guest for tonight, and we're going to have them share a little bit about themselves. So without further ado to all of listeners, let us all welcome Drona Ishemi Kapepuchol. Hi, Ishemi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right,
Very good. First of all, thank you for joining us tonight and for sharing your stories to our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's start there.
Sure. Yes, I do. I'm a chairman. I'm going to do it with a shimmy. I'm going to do it with a tetchul. Nahan, Ineski, Tikne, Wetechan, Gushkatan, Wang, Pianuchan, Tikne, Wetechan, Estado, Sengutsuk, Ne, Itugai, Chulatechan, Iquastugai, Washington, D.C., Ne, Itmantal, Panechunamit, Na, Pescaraway, Wanara Costa. Hi, everybody. My name is Petrona Shemita Pepechul. I was born on the ancestral land of my people, the Nahua people of Cuscatlan, which is now known as El Salvador. And I live now here in Chocolate City in the ancestral land of the Piscataway and Anacostan people known as Washington, D.C. I'm super excited to be here and talking with you all a little bit about me, about my experiences. I am a trans woman. I grew up in Virginia, and I've been living in this area all my life. I moved elsewhere very, very briefly, but I've always come back. Haven't been gone for more than 6 months. So this is my home. This area is my home. And I have been in community with people of this land for many years now. And my goal in life is to continue being in community with all the people that, not just the people who this is their ancestral land, but also the people who come here, the people who were brought here, and all the people who make this city, what it is.
Love that.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing a little bit about yourself. And I would add to that, I think Mimi and I have known Shemi for a few years now. Shemi is also one of our supporters and part of Trans Pride Washington, D.C. And Shemi have curated art and workshops that they were offering to everyone who were attending our event. So Shemi, thank you so much for being a collaborator and a partner and ensuring that we're creating the space for our siblings, not only in the Washington D.C. area but across the DMV. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for all the work
you
do as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let me just kick us off with our first question. You touched on this a little bit in your intro and how you have shared your identity of both part of the Indigenous community and your trans identity. So can you share with us and our listeners a bit about your journey and the intersection of your Indigenous and trans identity and how that, that two identities shape you today?
Sure. In regards to my gender, being assumed a boy as a child and not ever feeling that way, I was what I would now consider like a non-binary teenager. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I felt empowered to be a trans woman. People always say that like you don't choose to be trans. I have the experience that I did. I chose to be a trans woman. For me, being a trans woman was easier. It's a little complicated. I think it was easier to explain myself, explain my gender, explain my identity through that moniker of trans woman. And so it's something that I embrace, and I have, at the beginning, when I first began to identify as a trans woman, I embraced it because it felt like it was the only way I could really explain myself. Mm-hmm. I've written like poetry about how I felt that I needed to assimilate into trans womanhood, which I still feel that way, even this like talking with other trans women, sometimes I might feel the need to feel more feminine, like maybe do more makeup or just talk in a different way. Being a trans woman has it. It's really important to my identity, but it's an identity that comes from a colonial perspective. It comes from the perspective of what is womanhood, what is trans womanhood, and trans womanhood many times is seen as white womanhood, to assimilate into society, to have the right hair, have the right makeup, have the right products, have the right this, have the right that, which also ties into capitalism, which is tied into like white supremacy. So for me as an Indigenous trans woman, as an Indigenous person in general, this assimilation into trans womanhood is something that I did because it was the only way that I could be understood by others. And it was easier than explaining to them, no, I'm a woman. I do not believe in all these different things. My body is fine the way it is. I'm explaining, like having to explain all these different things about my culture that I don't really feel like I need to. It makes it just easier putting on that blanket of I'm a trans woman. And it gets me what I want. It gets me my right pronouns. It gets me the people looking at me the way that I want them to look at me, which at the end of the day is what I feel gender presentation and gender performance really is about, getting people to see you the way that you want to be looked at. And for me, yeah, it just saying I'm a trans woman makes it so much easier. And it gives me community. It gives me great women to be able to be in community with and learn from. And
So that's question. Kind of
So
question. So would you trade the word choose for acceptance? You accepted that you were a trans woman versus chose that you were a trans woman, from everything that I was actually hearing? Because you're like, I feel this way, I look this way. I didn't really choose that because, you know, all of the colonialism, all of the things that we're told, all of the you should do this, you should do that, the binaries, right? But you accepted and came into, and for you to feel an ease, right, is to step into something that's less burdensome, I would feel. So all I heard was, I accepted that this was me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I did accept it. I will say that the reason I say choose is because there are specific things about trans womanhood and being accepted in trans womanhood. The certain roles you have to be able to play with the way that we present. Mm-hmm. If we don't present that way, you're not really accepted in trans womanhood by other trans women. And so for me, I chose to do that.
To dig in
every single time I'm in spaces with trans women to ensure that I look the best that I can, because I don't want people to be like, oh, well, if you didn't wear makeup today, then are you really a woman?
Right.
Because for me, I think it's kind of similar. It's not the same. I don't think it's the same. But I think it's similar to when some folks say, like, I'm not trans, I'm a woman of trans experience. I'm not a trans woman, I'm a woman of trans experience. I'm a woman. I do accept that I'm a trans woman. But at the end of the day, I live my life as a woman. The the umbrella of trans, that adjective only pops up in certain times. So yeah, I think that, yeah, I accept my womanhood, but I choose trans womanhood.
Right. You choose the degree. And yeah. I mean, I feel like, and also because I had this conversation in our last show with a friend of ours about gatekeeping somewhat of what trans womanhood is, because a lot of times what people don't talk about in the community is the difference between, you know, white trans women and trans women of color, and how some, you know, a lot of white trans women don't always, you know, play the role that you're talking about, right? The hair, the makeup, the femininity, and then we get into these politics, we get into these issues, bathroom, you know, uncomfortability, what's a woman? And, you know, how are you expressing these things? You know, I would say to look like a woman instead of transitioning to look like a woman who's tired of being a woman. You know, so there's a difference, right, of where we see this in community, because a lot of times it's for safety. It's for, you know, having less issue. You want to go to a coffee shop. You want to enjoy that cup of coffee. You don't want to have mockery. You don't want to have issue, especially now in the climate. It's risen about 70 degrees in the last 4 weeks. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I hear exactly what you're saying, you know, to turn the degree up, not to conform necessarily with what the trans community is involved in the grouping that you're in, but to feel comfortable and confident within conversation with those women in order to feel good within it. Because we know that our own communities, rainbow across, can be very negative, right? It's always about look back scene, the diet, the look, the clothes. Now it's getting into career and how all of those things are, where at a time it was happy to be who you are. So a lot of the shaming comes from, you know, social media. Everybody talks about that in general, about social media, the Instagram, what people look like now. It's moved over to a community that had that in their mindset already, but now it's gotten even bigger. And there isn't a lot of justification of, you know, ousting people and everything else. But I do feel like it does come from a place of safety from our older trans, you know, allies or siblings or, you know, whatever we want to say, you know, mothers, because, you know, they didn't have that opportunity to play around with who they were. You know, society wouldn't let you. But now jumping into the indigenous part of your world, okay, how does being trans play into the indigenous world when we have history of, you know, two-spirited people and shamans and the way trans folks were looked at in a prior time?
Yeah. Religion is really a major component to it. Whenever there is a Catholic or Christian component to the community that you're in, it's there's very few times when there's acceptance. For me specifically, there's not acceptance from my family, and so it's very common for people from my community that are, you know, LGBTQ to experience discrimination from their families. I have children, and my dad has never met my children. That to me is absolutely absurd, that you could be a grandparent and not want to meet your grandchildren. But Christianity makes that happen, and it creates the illusion of, like, I'm doing something right by not meeting these children. By not connecting with this part of my family, and many LGBTQ Native people, they leave their communities. I don't want to speak for, like, other communities, But it is a very common thing that the communities themselves create laws and institutions where people are not accepted, and it is all because of these lost practices that, you know, you were talking about how Indigenous LGBT people were revered and were shamans and were community leaders. Those things still kind of exist now. You know, we do have Indigenous LGBTQ leaders and people that are spiritual workers and all of that stuff. But many of these people are disconnected from their birth families, and have to create the chosen families that other LGBTQ people also have to create. It's unfortunate, but it is the reality. It's something that we all share in common, and it's something that we have to keep working for. We have to keep working for acceptance within LGBTQ communities of Native people and in Native communities of LGBTQ people, because there are also instances where some Native people just don't feel comfortable being in LGBTQ spaces because there's the misunderstanding of right. Of culture. There's like microaggressions and random questions, uncomfortable questions, and things that just make you feel like othered. There's, you know, we can talk about it a little bit more. You know, there's things that people can do to ensure that they're not othering people when they go into community spaces.
Completely.
Especially people who the culture that we're in might seem completely foreign. Maybe they don't understand the language, or maybe they don't have the culture of whatever the local community's culture is.
Do you ever wonder how people who have been harmed by different movements over centuries can actually start to become the bully? Do you feel like a lot of times it's finally not me? I can look at somebody else and say, it's them that's the problem. I think a lot of people take it off of themselves and their own pain and issues, because I'll never really understand how marginalized communities can now marginalize other communities to which aren't affecting them. I know everybody has their own experiences, you know, and run-ins with, you know, the LGBTQ community and whatever, but, you know, if we blanket everything, you know, that's going to be what these other marginalized communities are saying not to do. Right. And all of us on here are people of color, you know, different descents, whatever we want to say. And we have to walk with that first before anything else we say about ourselves. And I don't think a lot of people really understand that. You can't take away my brown person experience just because, you know, happen to be trans or whatever else, you know. So it's really puzzling to me that people would not want to meet, you know, grandchildren or, you know, protect their own child, especially against things that they've been fighting before you were even, you know, a thought. So it's really unfortunate. And for those listening, you know, please take this in that, you know, we're always fighting certain things, but how many times are we ourselves the perpetrator of the things we don't like? So continue to educate and understand and listen to what Patrona is saying, that she comes from Indigenous land. We always talk about what land we're on and what should be given back, or what reparations should be given, or, you know, anything else. If we look at the common situation to which we're fighting, maybe these other issues really aren't an issue that you should be getting into and straying away from what helps you personally. So, you know, I'm so sorry to hear that, you know, and, you know, you sit here so strong and so poignant and, you know, you've done so much for our community that, you know, a bravo, because not a lot of people can turn and channel those things into something that helps more people outside of themselves. So, you know, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah,
I, you know, it made me also, your comment made me think about, your comment about, like, how can marginalized people do things to other marginalized people? It's something that's, you know, it's been historic. Like, a lot of people think that there's just the example here in the United States that Native people all fought for the Union, for instance. Mm. That is a fallacy, because there were Native people that were slavers, and that's something that a lot of people don't really know. And I think it's really important for the conversations of the experiences of Native people not being a monolith being discussed. There were Native people that enslaved African people. There were Native people that fought to keep African people enslaved. There were Native people who one of the most well known tragedies in Native history is the Trail of Tears. The stories of the experiences of the enslaved on the Trail of Tears is something that is erased many times in these conversations about Native people and the tragedies that happen to Native peoples. And it's really important to bring them up and to bring that to the table so that people can learn more about the diversity of the Native community, because we aren't all the same. Some of us come from communities that have that also intermarried with African people, and so the experiences of Native people are all over the place. And especially when you cross the border, you know, I come from a community from a different country. Our experiences are completely different than the ones from here in the United States.
Shami, thank you for highlighting that, because I think it touched on what Mimi have, you know, shared as well, that, you know, it really goes into, like, that, you know, how are we learning and how are we educating ourselves in, you know, the full history of any community, right? But it's an Indigenous people, LGBTQ, because to your point, and I can resonate to what you have shared, that even within, you know, our own community, there are, you know, diversity of, like, values and culture that are, you know, some similarities and are different, that kind of represents, you know, that part of the community. And I think it's important for our listeners to, you know, kind of hear some of these conversations that we're having, because if we're not being intentional in educating ourselves or leaning in on some resources, you know, such as the conversation that we're having today, or other resources, that we really won't be able to learn a little bit more about them. And then that will just kind of lean on, like, what are assumptions, you know, that we have based on, like, what society or social acceptance means when we're talking about, you know, the Indigenous people community, LGBTQ+. And I think it's very critical and intentional, you know, that you're uplifting that story within the community, because I think it's important for us to kind of stay in that curiosity. So, like, what is it, you know, that I have the opportunity to continue to learn, right? Or even looking at it as, so, like, you know, in this moment that I'm listening to you or to our listeners listening to our conversation, recognizing how are they reacting to what you're saying and what we've been talking about, and leaning in on that is, like, okay, why am I having this curiosity if they are having curiosity? Or why am I having these feelings if they are having feelings, right? And what are some of the things that I need to do, you know, to kind of lean in on those feelings that I'm having or curiosity that I have to learn more about this community. So thank you for, you know, shedding a light on the importance that within the community, there are diversity of culture, values, and other things. Yeah. Well, we have a lot more for you, Shemi, but we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, we just wanted to, again, share to our listeners that this is our pledge drive. And for more than 48 years, WPFW has been the soundtrack to our lives. Mm-hmm. Moments like this, moments of revelation, joy, stories, sadness, and resistance. So we ask for our listeners and for everybody who has been a follower of Inside Out Radio to donate to WPFW by going online on WPFW.org or by calling 1-800-222-9739. We also wanted to hear from our listeners. So if you want to be part of this conversation, if you have any questions or curiosity, please do give us a call at 202-588-0893. We are going to be right back. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to hear more about Shemin. So be right back.
Ain't free. I'm the D-I-V-A, that's MC. I'm the hot, tidy, arty body, yeah, that's T. I don't acknowledge time, I do whatever I please. Diamonds in my hair, yeah, that's pure luxury. I'm a bad bitch, but I'm good.
You're back. Well, welcome back. If you are just now listening to us, my name is Bianca Sprague and my co-host Mimi, and we are Inside Out Radio, and we are on every Monday at 6 p.m. And tonight we are chatting with a friend of ours, an advocate within the community and who's been a big supporter of Trans Pride Washington, D.C., Shemi. And Shemi is sharing a little bit about their stories and lived experiences. So again, thank you, Shemi, and, you know, for sharing your story with us. So we're going to get right to it. I know we have a little bit of like tech difficulties with the music, but we'll just jump right into the conversation that we've been having, right? So one of the things that I know that many of us, you know, engage in conversation and kind of touch on this a little bit is, you know, the importance of uplifting our voices and elevating our visibility, right? So as you think about, you know, uplifting our voices and elevating our visibility, I know one of the ways that you continue to do that is through your organization that you have. That just, I mean, from somebody who have experienced it at Trans Pride Washington, D.C., it really does bring joy, you know, not only to the participants that's there. It does, you know, it creates that community and it builds on that community. So wanted to, you know, talk to you a little bit about, aside from your organization that you have, and you mentioned about your family as well, you know, what brings you joy? You know, are there any moments of joy or connection that really stands out to you?
What brings me joy? I enjoy I enjoy cooking. I enjoy the process of getting things from the earth and making them, or from animals and making them into something for people that I love. I enjoy making things for my child to learn. Hmm. I enjoy just being in quiet. I do enjoy being in loud spaces as well, but the quietness really does bring me a lot of peace. Being able to, we have an altar here, being able to talk with my ancestors, going to them when I have a concern. I enjoy being able to have a connection with them that to some people within my community seems like witchcraft, but I enjoy being able to be in a space that's mine and know that my ancestors are there with me, and I can talk to them. I enjoy not watching TV.
Yeah.
I get trapped sometimes in some stuff that I like, and I try to stay back.
What's your favorite thing to cook, if there's any? Like, what's one thing that is like, this is my happy place, the process, the cooking, the meal?
I really enjoy making pupusas. It takes a while. It's a long process for me because I like to make the things myself. Like, the beans take forever to make, and just making the chicken, processing it so that it can be a paste. And then the actual process of making the pupusa itself, and then, you know, cooking them, it's an entire process, and it requires intention and love, and I try to put that in my cooking. But there's times when you can't make the beans from scratch, or you can't make the chicken. You have to, you know, get canned beans, or you have to get, you know, a rotisserie chicken, and then make with what you have. And that itself also, I feel, is part of the love, you know, being able to take what you have, and the way that our grandmothers would also like be able to feed the families, the huge families with little, being able to take things that that a lot of people might look down upon, like canned food, and using it to be able to still have a culturally relevant and yummy food.
That just brought me back a little bit into like my childhood, especially when you were sharing a little bit about just some of the things that we can, you know, make something quick, right? You know, it's always there's level of like joy that you have when you're making it from scratch, because it just kind of brings you back to your childhood or the stories that you have. But, you know, there's still that importance, if you're, to your point, getting like, you know, canned beans. You know, for me, it's like Spam was such a big thing in the Philippines. And, you know, growing up poor, Spam was like the only thing that we can afford at the time. And now it's like, you know, something. And when, you know, other Filipino family or friends were looking at you eating Spam, you know, there's that like level of like either judgment or like, why are you eating Spam and stuff like that. But to me, it's like, it brings me back to my childhood. And I think I just resonated to what you said about that, because, you know, oftentimes it's, you know, those things that some people may think as, you know, negative, that to us just means totally different because of like, you know, how we grew up or, you know, the story behind it that is more meaningful than, you know, actually what, you know, the canned food is. So I just, I resonated into that. And I think it goes back to, again, how we, you know, just kind of really tell our stories, not just from, you know, our identities, but from our culture, you know, from all of the other aspects of our identity, because to, you know, to what you were sharing earlier, it's like multifaceted identity that we carry as individuals, right? And I think all of those connected to how we, you know, build our community, build relationship with people, you know, how we care for other people, how we care for our, you know, families, our loved ones, our partners and stuff like that, because they're very important. And I think the takeaway for our listeners is to really not associating a community as like one form, right? That it actually expanded into like what society accepts, what community means for us. So thank you for, you know, for again, sharing that insight again. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, you know, as we said in the beginning of the show, we're celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day, and we're learning so much already from, you know, what you've shared. And I hope that our listeners are also learning from this. But, you know, I wanted to ask, given that it is Indigenous Peoples Day, like, what are some of the ways that people can celebrate, can honor? How do you honor, how do you celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day?
Yeah, it's really important to connect with local communities that are organizing already. There is a local community called the American Indian Society of Washington, D.C. Annually, they host an event on Indigenous Peoples Day. Before it, when it was, it's Columbus Day again, but like before when it was considered Columbus Day, they would meet every single year. And now it's like, I think it's the 34th year, the 33rd year. And being every year they have this this gathering where they have artists come in, they have speakers come in from out of town and from inside of the area to discuss their thoughts on the day, to discuss the things that their communities are doing, to share their art, and it's really a lot of fun. It's a space that is open to allies. It's open to people outside of the Native community to come in and learn to be supportive of the communities that exist. That process can be repeated. Could be replicated anywhere in the country. You can find out who's organizing in your city and see if they have meetings that are available to the public and just attend without the expectation of what am I going to get from them, but just like what can I learn, what can I gain from the experience not in a vulture kind of way, but in a making a connection with the local people kind of way. It's an unpopular thing to say, I think, but the land back and resources, giving resources to communities, to local communities, is really important as well. If someone wants to make a tradition of like an annual donation to a local community, that's a great way to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day, mm-hmm. or to investigate what Indigenous groups exist in the area, what organizations exist in the area, so that you can support throughout the year. perhaps they're having events throughout the year. So using Indigenous Peoples Day as a day to update your yearly calendar to fill in the events that are going to happen throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Just using the day as a way to be more to intentionally connect with the local community. And if there isn't a local community around, finding a way to connect with the land as well. The land around the continent, but specifically in the United States, has a lot of issues, either with extraction or with like some really traumatic history that's happened to these lands. A lot of traumatic history has happened to the lands, and so being able to have the day, if you don't have a community to connect with the land, find a way to offer that land something, some prayers, or offer the land some gifts, maybe plant a tree, do something that will honor the place that you are, and the people as well, and if the people are around.
Yeah, thank you, Shemi. I think you've given our listeners a lot of like options in terms of like ways to support not just the day, but you know, to your point, supporting throughout the year, whether it could be local organizations, resources that are available in the area, museums who are, you know, putting together events, or organizations who are putting in an event, not just on the day, but throughout the year. And I hope that our listeners would be able to really be more intentional in finding out more, you know, doing a little bit more of research and about like, you know, what's in the area, you know, that they can support. I also appreciate the shout out that, you know, if anything, donate, right? You know, because donation does go a long way, especially for organizations who are doing the work year round, right? You know, it's always appreciative when we have ongoing donations that are coming in to continue the work that they're doing. And I think that goes to our show as well, and to, you know, WPFW in terms of continuing to donate to the program, so we can continue to have this conversations in the stations. Right? I think it's important that you know, our voices are uplifted in these conversations, you know, that we have the space to engage in this very meaningful and important conversations that we're having. And I hope that our listeners will continue to donate to us by going on WPFWFM.org or by calling in 800-222-9739. Shemi, we want to thank you for joining us tonight. And I know we're going to see more of you as we get ready for 2026 Transpride, but I just really appreciative and grateful that you were able to spend a little bit of time with us to share a little bit about your story. I know how busy the household is with, you know, super energetic kids that you have. So really thank you for spending a little bit of time with us. So with that, we're going to say goodbye for now. Continue listening to Inside Out Radio every Monday at 6 p.m. And don't forget, it is Pledge Drive all the way to October 25. So continue to donate to our show and to WPFW. Good night, everybody. Yeah.
Thank you. I lay awake and feel you breathe, and thank the Lord I live to see the take a little bit of every fiber that's embedded in me.
I won't let you break when you fall. But if you leave, just whisper something softly to the wind. You are my right here. But if you please, just stay with me a while and help me laugh through the tears till I'm gone. And baby, I'm here for it all. Red carpets and cannon of love. Bugattis, whatever they call. Baby, I'm here for real. I'll read your sleep overnight that kept me from losing my mind through things I don't care to recall. So baby, I'm here for real.
Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back and is coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films scored live with hip hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two-Tone Jones. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9739. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world.